This interview is for information only and should not be considered as investment advice or a recommendation to buy shares in the company featured. Welcome to this Stockbox interview. Hello and welcome to the Research Talks with Alan Green from Stockbox. Alan, how are you doing?
Hello, Mark. Is this a research talk or is it a market musings?
Well, yes, it's a bit of both, isn't it? I was wondering what to introduce it as. I mean, it's not a research talk as such because we are going to be musing. But then, of course, my co-host, Kenny, who's usually on the market musings, I thought might get a bit upset if I introduced it as market musings and he wasn't involved. So welcome to the research talk / market musings with Alan Green on Stockbox. Alan, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks, Mark. Of course, Kenny is away on holiday, I believe, isn't he? So he's sunning himself alongside a loch in Scotland, I believe.
Indeed, yeah. Hopefully not getting eaten alive by the midges that plague Scotland, obviously. But yeah, what a beautiful part of the world to live in and just go on holiday there. So yeah, he's enjoying himself.
So it's fabulous. Yeah. Well, is Kenny that sort of normal Scottish pale blue color, or is he does he have well, I guess if he's been sunbathing alongside a loch, he might actually have a semblance of a suntan now.
He might actually, but I've never seen him with one, so that is a good question.
I always remember Billy Connolly describing sort of Glaswegians and Scottish people as this kind of pale blue color, so
yeah. Well, maybe he is. He probably is. But, so today we're going to be really just having a sort of a muse, aren't we, rather than a research talk. And I think the reason really is because, as most people know, I mean, the markets have dried up a little bit, which they often do this time of year. I think last year was an exception because of everyone was effectively in lockdown and had nothing really to do. So the summer kind of carried on like the rest of the year. And the only other year that I remember where the summer was not dry was, I think, 2017, where we kind of had a bit of a bull run on commodities. I think it was 17 or 18, something like that. But generally, in the years that I've been investing, which is probably about 2013, you can almost guarantee, you know, the sell in May and stay away, don't come back until St. Ledger's Day really, really does happen. And every year you sort of think, oh, it won't this year, I'll keep my positions. But then you get to the end of May and the volumes just seem to drop off a cliff, don't they? And it seems the time with, you know, school holidays and parliament recess and, you know, people obviously still work, but the markets just dry up. I don't know. I mean, you've been investing longer than me. Do you sort of feel the same?
It's been the same pretty much every year. In fact, I think the only year that I can recall that we just had a run straight through was back in 2003. And of course, that was in the middle of the dot-com boom era. And I can just remember that particular year. There was volume, liquidity all through the summer. People were just buying stocks and trading, and they were just active throughout the summer. But really, aside from that, it certainly follows. So, yeah, if you're just trading, I think there is a very strong argument to, if you have a strong run during quarter one into quarter two, then there is a strong argument for taking some money off the table and sitting on your hands until the end of the year. But that's only if you're going to follow the markets every day. Me personally, I can't be asked. I've got positions. I've gone in to positions in stocks and into funds because I fundamentally believe, I've done my research, and the sell in May phenomenon is always going to be there. If I sold out, I might not get back in time. I might miss something, or there might be an early catalyst in the market to drive stuff back up again. So I'm happier just sitting there. And in fact, I might use if there is a pullback, I might use that pullback to increase my positions in the holdings I've got. So I think there are opportunities to do that. And obviously we're seeing a malaise, as we've said, in the commodity sector, you know, in particular amongst small cap mining stocks at the moment. And I think there are some great opportunities out there now.
Yeah, I think it's a good time to be thinking about. I think you've got time. You don't have to worry about rushing. I mean, you should never, I don't think, jump into a stock without good research. And there's always a chance to buy in, you know, later. You don't have to always feel you've got to jump in with all your money at once. But this is particularly a good time, I think, to just, you know, sit back, take stock a little bit, look at the stocks that you think you like, and just watch them, because they're probably not going to move very much until we get back into September. and you can sort of just start putting some extra cash in, really. And so you say you don't worry at all. You're sort of just happy to leave your positions throughout the summer, maybe take a little bit of time off, sort of thing, and just kind of let them run.
Well, a friend of mine who's also active in the market has big positions in funds, and he certainly takes some money out and sits on some money. I'm happy to hold the stocks and the positions I've got, and if there is downtime like this, then I'll use the periods of time when they've come off to top up, and it just means that if there is a pullback, then obviously, or if there is a snapback in quarter three, quarter four, which of course looks like we're going to get this year, then of course I'm in profit much earlier, and I'm happy to do that. Unless, of course, I think last year was a little different. But I did sell out prior to COVID. I think it was the 13th, 14th of March last year. I sold out and came out of a lot of the big stocks, and I got back into stocks like Shell at I think it was below £10 a share. And Shell, of course, have just put out a very strong set of numbers. In fact, along with some of the other big oil companies, you know, like Chevron has topped profit estimates last week too. So the oil stocks, I think, still have a lot of mileage, a long way to go. If there's an exceptional circumstance like COVID or something else on the horizon, then I might make a move. But if the outlook is fairly benign, as we're seeing at the moment, we're still seeing government spending continue at record levels. We're seeing, of course, some furlough schemes coming to an end, but being replaced by other schemes, and of course, you know, all the time these asset purchases continue, the net effect is the weakening of the fiat currency for the country. So hard assets like commodities, like precious metals, like iron, for instance, iron ore, like copper, those are always going to be solid stores of value. So I think what will happen is eventually the markets will recognize that the best way to access or gain exposure to these stocks is either by buying into a fund that holds the commodity directly, or by buying into some of the mining companies that are engaged in developing projects. And of course, we're seeing a number of companies we discussed in the past: Power Metal Resources, ECR Minerals, Conroy Gold, and other companies developing these assets. And when these assets come of age, when the underlying commodity comes of age, then there is often a spectacular resulting increase in the stock.
Yeah, indeed, you've just got to position yourself for that catalyst moment, and it's a very, very good time to be positioning. So, I mean, you did mention there, Alan, about sort of money printing, and there's probably going to be another round of QE, I imagine. What do you think about this whole inflation narrative? Because I kind of see it comes and goes. You kind of see, yeah, it's here, but it's transitory. You know, it's not going to stay. And then it's like, ooh, actually, only last week, I think the Fed said, actually, it might be here for a little bit longer. And it's a funny thing, because I kind of think that governments actually probably want it, I think, because obviously they can use it to inflate away the massive debt that they've got there that's been built up over so many years. But of course, they don't want the world to really know what's going on. So I don't want to get into conspiracy theories. I know we were talking about conspiracy theories before we came on air, but do you think inflation's here, is the question I'm going to ask you?
I think there is food inflation, certainly, and there's scarcity, certainly in the UK here. Just on a very localized level, when you go to the supermarket, you're seeing shortages of food here and there, which is Which hasn't been widely broadcast, but there do seem to be shortages of various core items in the supermarket. Mm. That's going to push prices up. So I think we are going to see a modicum of inflation creep in over the next few quarters. We're going to see the government. Governments will of course want to respond to that, but they have their hands tied really in regard to increasing interest rates, of course, because if they increase interest rates, then many families who are right on the edge, families of course who may have been on furlough schemes have come off the furlough schemes, maybe will be losing their jobs because the companies that have been paying the furlough schemes are no longer in business or can't recover quickly enough. And of course, then you've got the issues of mortgages being paid, debt, and everything else that needs to be serviced. And if you push interest rates up, then you're going to push some mortgage rates up for those that aren't on fixed rates. And of course, that's going to create absolute havoc. So, the government's hands are tied on that level, but of course, if the interest rates do go up, then there is a case, of course, for people that have cash in savings accounts to see a better return from that. So one section of the population will suffer, another section of the population, you know, the older generation with more disposable income, of course, will see a benefit in that. So and I do sense this government would like to be able to increase rates at some point, but I think for the short term their hands are tied and they'll just have to go with the flow.
Yeah, I think it will be a little while before we see that, and probably inflation will have to really start to motor on before they actually make that call. But you're right, it's going to be very difficult for them to make that call, because it could really put a lot of families and individuals into a lot of problems there, which of course then, you know, the domino effect, and we know where all that always leads. So,
indeed, yeah.
I mean, your cash is really, if there is inflation, you don't want cash, do you? You want to put it into stuff, because the money always finds its way into assets or commodities, and maybe just inflates the stock market a bit more. So, I mean, aside from property and all those nice things, we're obviously going to talk about the markets. So, I mean, what sort of companies have you got your eye on or perhaps looking to increase then, do you think, that are good, you would say, sort of good bets for, you know, when autumn comes back in again and the nights get longer and we all go back to work and hopefully the markets start to motor on again?
I've got a broad cross section, a lot of exposure to junior mining stocks, and again, I think you've got to be selective with these stocks. You've got to look at the communications from the company. You've got to look at the way the company is talking to the market, the board, their track record, and all the rest of it. And of course, as we've said here on many occasions, probably one of the best exponents in that regard is Paul Johnson at Power Metal Resources, who is communicating with the market. Probably once every couple of hours. I don't think that's any exaggeration, simply because there are so many projects and the spread of opportunities the company has, any one of the multiple projects they've got running around the world at this time could develop and could turn into a monster. And of course, we've got the joint venture with Kavango Resources in Botswana, which is on the cusp of a very exciting copper discovery, not far from the T3 discovery that Paul made when he was running Metal Tiger a few years ago. So you know, these are company changing events, and they're very exciting. And of course, if that coincides with a surge in the underlying price of the commodity, then it is, to use Paul's words, bonanza time. There's also lithium as well. I mean, lithium has had a very strong run this year too, and many companies that have projects that they're developing. And of course, we spoke about Spey Resources a few weeks ago, the TSX listed company that's got assets in that area in the US. There are so many opportunities in that space at the moment. Cadence Minerals, of course, has a stake in European Metals Holdings as well. It owns 12% of EMH. And EMH, of course, has the Sinovec lithium project in on the Czech-German border. And it's rated to be the fourth largest lithium hard rock deposit discovery in the world currently. And on the back of that, there was news out last week that the Czechoslovakian government have approved or working with CEZ Group, which are a giant East European utility. They've approved the building of a gigafactory in the Ore Mountains or close to the Ore Mountains, and of course that will be supplied by the Sinovec lithium mine, which will be developed there. So very exciting times there too. But there is predicted to be, I think, a real squeeze in lithium going forward, because I remember speaking to Kieran Mazzari, the chief executive of Cadence, a few years ago about this, and he said that what people don't realise is that, yes, you can have a lithium deposit discovered, but in actual fact, it's probably 1% or less than 1% of those discoveries actually turn into quality lithium deposits or deposits which are can be commercialized. So, of course, that's the big challenge too. You know, you've got all these projects out there and projects that have been worked on previously and revisited, but it doesn't just apply to lithium. It applies to gold. It applies to precious metals, nickel, copper, cobalt, so on. You know, that's why the due diligence has to be so thorough. There are millions of projects out there all over the world that are being looked at and are in the hands of some very capable mining companies, but a lot of them lay dormant simply because they don't have the commercial potential until, of course, the underlying commodity moves to a point where it then creates a commercial opportunity at that dormant asset. So so there are all these factors you have to take into account. So the great thing is, of course, if there is a surge in the underlying commodity prices, a lot of projects out there that are lying dormant at the moment suddenly become commercially viable.
And so are you more exposed then to the mining exploration space? I know I am. And
yeah, I've got a significant exposure to that, and I also own Rio Tinto as well. That's a bit of a cash cow too. It's always had a very solid run, and I first got into Rio back in, goodness me, was it 2007? I think I picked up some big block of shares at about £16-17, and of course they've just gone from strength to strength, really. So pays a dividend every year, so it's a great way to own an asset like that. And you know, the stock will fluctuate. I think it's about 60 quid at the moment, and it'll fall off to maybe low 50s and then push to high 60s. So you know, but overall, over a period of time, of course, it still massively outperforms anything else. And also, I think there's a case for I've got hold some financials. I've got Barclays, I've got Lloyds, I hold Legal & General as well. And again, you know, these are financial companies Legal & General continues to pay dividends. Lloyds, of course, is a recovery. It's a very UK focused bank, the scope there probably isn't as big as some, but I spoke about Barclays last week. Of course, a very strong set of Q2 results, driven largely by the investment banking arm. And of course, this is historically where Barclays has always had a bit of an edge on the other banks, because so its profits come from that. And I think the profits were 2.6 billion, and analysts had penciled in a profit of 1.7 billion. So, you know, Barclays exceeded that, but a large chunk of that was driven by the performance of investment banking. So, and I think that's where Barclays has the potential upside, because it's got the X factor in a very successful investment banking arm. And of course, the CEO, Jez Staley, has come from that background. He's got a background in investment banking, so he understands that driver.
So you've got a mixture there, really, of what you might call safe, I guess, dividend paying stocks, which you can put your money in and just, you know, relax sort of thing, and let let that investment grow through dividends or, you know, compound gains. But you've also got the excitement as well of the juniors.
The excitement of the juniors, and of course, yeah, we've got I've got a couple of tech stocks as well, okay. Still holding Bidstack. I came out of Bidstack. I just became very disappointed with the comms from the company. I think the CEO James Draper, although the tech is very good, I think he's not communicated well with the market in recent years. So I came out of that, but I came out and then there was a further fundraising at 2p. So I went back in at that level and I'm now quite happy to sit on that and see where it goes. And it's still around 2p, but I think the technology is at the point now where it's boom or bust. You know, this is the time now where they've jumped across all the hurdles in developing the tech, validating the ROI for advertisers using the technology, and now they've got all the major agencies around the world testing it and using it, and now they've got to deliver. Now they've got to become embedded and become part of the fabric of the advertising infrastructure out there. So yeah. I'm looking for great things from Bidstack, but I think I'll take profits fairly early on that.
Okay. And in terms of the mining sort of sector cycle and then boom, I mean, I felt for a while that it's long overdue an uptick, and I just linking in my portfolio, I think I pretty much it's all all miners apart from one, which is Sabian. Have you heard of Sabian?
Sabian.
Sabian Tech. It was
Yes, I have. Yes. Yeah. I think I met the CEO a few years ago, actually.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah, they recently, I'm not entirely sure of the story, but I think they recently re-kind of financed and I think there's a new board in place and the CEO put a lot of his own money into the company. The only thing is, again, their comms have not been great. So they're into sort of heating solutions and CO2 capture, I believe. It's an eco play, which I think is great. I think that's going to be a lot more eco stocks coming, you know, in the future with where the world is going. But again, it's, you know, the confidence that I got was, well, it was two things. One, I thought it was a very cheap company, you know, low market cap, new story, new energy, but also the CEO putting in so much of his own money. I mean, it's like well over $100,000, I'm pretty sure, that he's put in. It's probably even more. You know, when you've got that skin in the game, you sort of think, well, he's not going to do that. You know, people aren't going to throw their money away, you know, for no reason. So clearly he has confidence in what he wants to achieve to grow that business. But one thing they just need to do is actually come out and articulate that a bit better, more. And it's maybe just taking them a little bit of time to get their ducks lined up, and then they'll come out and speak about it. But that's the only non-mining stock. So I'm well overweight in the mining sector, but it's because I do feel it's long overdue, an upcycle. Mm. And also, I just find it very interesting. I find it very exciting, you know, drilling, exploring for stuff.
Well, I think that's it. I think you know, one of the fundamental rules for investing is, I think anyone starting out should invest into a sector they understand. And if they don't understand it, research it until you do. And obviously, you and I are both in that position where we've got a good understanding of the sector and also the dynamics and the fundamentals underneath that actually drive the increase in value in the stock. I published an article. Well, an article was published, written by me in this month's What Investment magazine. It was about Power Metal Resources. But it's also about the wider surge in metals and mining that I believe is empowering a commodity supercycle. And I've already outlined the underlying reasons for that. It is indisputable that we have this ongoing monetary easing, which is going to create near perfect conditions for strengthening commodities. And of course, exactly. Commodities, we've already addressed this anyway, so we just process. But just moving on from that, I, as you were saying, you're into other, you've got Sabian as a company in your portfolio. I've also got another company in my portfolio that IPO'd last week, a company called Zenova Group, And I did speak about this on the podcast last weekend. And it's just a really exciting company, a company with which has developed a range of paints that protect and insulate against fire. And what they've done very cleverly is just put a series of product videos up on the website showing how a drinks can, for example, painted in this heat resistant paint, how it actually works and how it protects. Also, a piece of cardboard painted with the paint, all the way through to fire extinguishers with the same chemical compounds within the fire extinguisher that are so effective at dealing with fire. And I think, given the dreadful tragedies we've seen in Grenfell, for example, and then of course the wider situation globally, where we have unprecedented weather conditions that lead to massive fires across Australia and California, on so many levels, Zenova paints, I think, or Zenova paints, and also the render, of course, that the fireproof render that they can use in new builds as well. On so many levels, this has an almost limitless opportunity. It's just come to market, I think, very modestly valued now, I think at 23-24 million, but I see this company just exploding in value going forward. I just think it's got incredible opportunities, and I think I hope we're going to see some very exciting developments in the months to come.
Yeah, no, it's a good find, that, Alan, I think. Yeah, and you do seem to have a knack for finding the sort of the slightly cooler ones that perhaps have not been picked up yet but have got a really good growth story, and I think that is a really good one. One to watch for sure, particularly that market cap. It looks like the technology they've got is exceptionally good and can be used to fireproof lots of different things in housing and in industrial. But yeah, we spoke about that last week, didn't we, on the research talk? So
yeah, we did.
There's a good chat there from last week's research talks. I think in my portfolio, really, I mean, I'm quite excited about Conroy Gold. I know it's pulled back quite a bit, but they're kind of at that catalyst moment, I think, of signing that joint venture, which I get the feeling is fairly soon. But I'm not sure when it will actually happen. But it's going well, and if they can get that kind of lined up throughout August as we go into September, that might be quite a nice, a nice play, because they have got a significant project there over massive amounts of land. And if they can get this joint venture with Damir, which is a huge group, and I mean, they're really talking to the top of the company, well, the family, really. Damir have got the finance behind them to actually make it happen. So that's one I've got my eye on, what I'm invested in and really sort of rooting for. I think as well, Corcel, and that's actually one that's done well, hasn't it? Very recently, just this last week, I don't know if you've seen it, but Corcel has been doing really well, having some good uptick last week.
It has, yeah, Corcel. Well, I've actually got shares in Corcel from. I just like the idea and the technology. A company that has assets in mining, in mining opportunities, but also it's got the reserve power facility here in the UK in Cambridge, which I think is potentially going to be huge. And I think going forward, we're faced potentially, because the way power is consumed now is changing because of technology and IT, there are going to be power shortages, and companies like Corcel will be well placed to meet them. I've got shares in Corcel, and quite happy they've come back pretty strongly in the past week or so. So I remain a holder there.
Yeah, I think it's a great story that they've got there. They've got the from cradle to grave idea, haven't they? Literally taking the battery technology mineral out of the ground and then actually providing a solution to the national grid in the UK. And you're right, I think that would be the new way of delivering power on demand to the grid when it's needed, particularly as we decarbonise. So yes, good story there. And of course, Power Metal Resources, one of our favourites. If you want exposure to a mini Rio, a very, very mini Rio. That actually, I think power is a good one. I think that's what Paul is kind of going for. A massive spread of commodities across different projects around the world, but all at that kind of earlier stage, you know. So if any one or two of them come off, you know, you're really going to see a transformation in that company. And funnily enough as well, you know, GGP, Greatland Gold, you know, one of the biggest success stories of AIM.
Yes, yeah.
You know, and I was in Greatland Gold years ago, and I did well. I made nearly 100%, and I was quite happy with that. Of course, you know, if I'd held, I'd have been a lot better. But, you know, at the time, I needed the cash, and I can't complain. But I wouldn't have actually invested in it now because I'd have said, well, you know, it's too big, you know, for me. But speaking to the CEO, Sean Day, on both the Musings podcast and interviewing him, do you know, I think he's really going to take that company further. And he was at Northern Star Resources, and he took, that company went from, I think it was, he said about half a billion, 500 million or so, to about 10 billion. And when I was on the podcast with him, I actually checked the market cap of GGP, and it's around that at the minute. So I said, okay, is your plan to repeat that? And he basically said, yeah, I'd like to. So if, you know, they're going to, and of course, Havieron is their real flagship project that they've got a joint venture with.
Yep.
And they're able to focus a little bit of efforts on other projects as well because the joint venture partner is operating there. So really, you know, okay, GGP is a big market cap. You can't really say it's a junior anymore, but there's still potentially a lot of upside to come in Greatland Gold.
I agree. I think it's GGP is, if you like, the poster boy for investors into junior mining stocks. You know, that's where we all want our companies to go. And of course, Paul Johnson was involved with GGP a few years ago, and Andrew Bell. So there's a lot of background there, and the great thing is when something like that happens, it's not rocket science. You know, it's basic application. You know, good work by geologists to ascertain the find, prove up the find, undertake the feasibility studies, and then you build a mine and you get the stuff out of the ground. And of course, the explosion value from a company that's trading, say, where Power Metal is now, from, you know, 20, 25 million all the way up to half a billion. I mean, that's hugely exciting, and that's what we're all looking for. And of course, if as a canny investor you've got that locked away in a stocks and shares ISA, those gains are all tax free.
Exactly.
And these are potentially life changing investments.
Exactly. Okay. Good. Well, I wonder if it's worth us finishing off for a few minutes, just on other things that you can invest in, put your money in. And I know that we both do a little bit of crypto and NFTs. So I mean, how much are you into crypto, Alan? Do you hold any cryptocurrencies, and how do you feel about them?
I mean Bitcoin over the past few days we've seen a bit of resurgence in the price, haven't we? So I've got Bitcoin, and I've also got a tiny bit, I mean, you know, a smattering of Ethereum.
Okay.
And in my Coinbase account, I've gone through, you've got all these other coins, like I think Stellar Lumens and some various other sort of oddities, and you can earn free cryptocurrency just by
holding.
Not only by holding it, but also you can earn free cryptocurrencies by undertaking these surveys. So you watch the survey and then you answer questions. So you've taken in what the coin's about and the rationale behind the coin and the idea is, and then of course at the end of it you get paid for doing it. So so I, that's my involvement in crypto.
Okay.
I've had Bitcoin before, made some money on Bitcoin before, but didn't hold all the way through. But I have been going in. What I do now, I've actually got an account with Mode, which is very good for me. So I've gone in every few weeks, every month when the price has fallen off, and I've just topped up a bit.
Yeah, put some more in. Yeah, Mode's really good actually. And if people aren't sure about crypto, you think it's too risky, Mode is of course listed as well. It's a listed company, and Jonathan's really building. Well, he says a global super app taking on Visa and MasterCard, changing the way payments are made. I mean, phenomenal. And Bitcoin is not going away. I think it's pretty safe to say that now. It's going to be here. And I knew this was going to come, and we're hearing it now. I think only last week Rishi Sunak said the Bank of England are looking into doing a digital currency, CBDC.
Yeah.
Christine Lagarde's already said that in the ECB. And as soon as the Fed say that, then, well, you know, it's game
well,
on.
Well, actually, Fed Governor Lel Brainard yesterday said that there were urgent reasons for developing U.S. central bank digital currency.
There we go.
So the Fed's going to be on board too, and of course that validates the whole underlying story for cryptocurrency. It's the way we're going. I mean, ironically, of course, you know, when the central banks get involved like this, then it I suppose dilutes really the appeal of cryptocurrencies to some users, because of course it's just leveled. What crypto does, it levels the playing field for everyone. So if you can't access credit, if you can't access a bank account because you're impoverished and living in the middle of a poor country, then you can still access cryptocurrency. You know, no one's going to ask who you are because you're validated because of the blockchain. So
yeah.
That's the great thing about it. But of course, as this develops, then you're going to, you know, in terms of your identity and in terms of validating people, then of course that will change. So eventually, it'll just be an alternative to general currency. But certainly, I think there are great opportunities going forward. And of course, the offspin to that is, of course, the explosion in non-fungible tokens as well, which we've also spoken about.
Yeah, I know. But do you know my theory with the adoption of the CBDCs? I think it's a perfect excuse, not excuse, but a perfect segue, if you like, to rebase the dollar, the pound, the euro against something.
And yes.
Yeah. You know, we talked about the government debt at the start of this, and my sort of theory is that they'll adopt CBDCs, issue digital currencies, and they'll rebase it on something, and that's how we'll move away from all this QE and all this debt. We'll just basically start again, effectively, with CBDCs. But
that's actually a very sound theory, Mark. Yeah. I think it's got to the stage now where I think the US government debt levels are around 80 trillion, aren't they? Which it'll never ever pay back. So if you can't pay it back, what do? You just change the rules.
Yeah.
Well, you build a new playing field and start all over again.
Exactly.
And then that debt sort of fizzles out over a period of time, or becomes meaningless. And I think that's a very sound theory.
Yeah, but Bitcoin will still be here to stay, and I'm doing the same as you. I'm dollar cost averaging my Bitcoin, just buying bits every so often. And of course, I've got other ones. I've got XRP or Ripple, which is I like the look of Ripple because it's built around fast transactions. Mm-hmm. And I know there's an ongoing lawsuit going on, but my theory is that lawsuit is really just a way to actually get some regulatory clarity. Because I think the Americans like everything to go through the courts. You know, it has to all go through the courts, and once it's gone through the courts, and then that's kind of gospel for a very, very, very long time. And I think this is a reason for them to really get some regulatory clarity on the regulation of cryptocurrencies, and I think that will settle this year for sure. But XRP, lightning fast transaction speeds. They announced a deal with a company in Japan where basically to transfer money through the Philippines, because a lot of Filipino workers, they work overseas and they send a lot of money back home, and it costs them a lot of money, you know, remittance charges and that kind of thing. It's a very old-fashioned way of sending money. You lose a lot of money and it takes a long time. Well, Ripple have partnered with this company to effectively offer seamless transactions. It settles in nanoseconds, and it's the way it's going to be. You know, so I don't have a lot of faith for Ripple the company for sure, because their technology I think will be adopted and used in CBDCs, and XRP hopefully does benefit from that as well. So that's what I'm doing. I'm quite excited about crypto. I sort of think it's a very cool thing, and it's not going to go away. And dollar cost average, I think, is a good way of doing it. But then a bit of speculation as well on some of the other coins is is fun, isn't it? You know, it's .com. It's our .com. I wasn't around, you see, in .com. You were. So this is my .com moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's great. And you never know. And the thing is, if you can get involved with these coins, if you have a good run on Bitcoin, there's or a good run on Ethereum, there's no harm in diversifying and buying some of these other coins. I mean, I know XRP. I've been watching XRP. I know you've spoken about XRP beforehand, and keep on saying to myself, I must get in. But there are only so many hours in the day, and your portfolio can only go so far. So, at some point, I will sell out some Bitcoin and go into XRP for sure.
Okay, good. Okay, excellent. Do you want to talk about NFTs briefly? I know we've both been involved with the Gibraltar crypto stamp, and you were a very lucky man with that.
Well, NFTs, this is just an explosion of value, isn't it? It's incredible. Yeah. We've, of course, seen that piece of digital art by Beeple sell for $66 million, and other pieces have gone for similar amounts of money. All of the retro stuff seems to be very in. Early gaming images, Pokemon images, all that sort of thing. I think the NFT space is the ideal way to realize value for these assets that are out there. And of course, the issue up to now or hitherto has been about ownership. But I think certainly for me, I've learned through buying these digital cryptocurrency stamps, the Gibraltar cryptocurrency stamps, which of course arrived here, and then I opened up the wallet last week and spent a very small amount of money, and I got two ultra rares. I noticed those ultra rares are now selling for some $400 to $500 each. That was a very good return for me. I think you made the point the other week that you're holding the NFTs at the moment because of the fall off in Bitcoin value. But if cryptocurrency, of course, does recover, then I think the value of NFTs will rise proportionally with it. So
there are so many use cases for NFTs as well, as we've discussed before. You know, buying and selling things, putting ownership, digitizing a fixed asset, transfer of goods between people or assets between people. And then, of course, you've got the whole collector thing as well, which is stamp comes into. But I remember Pokemon cards. You used to play with your friends on the streets and swap cards. But also you could actually play games with it, And everyone has a smartphone these days. Children have got smartphones. You can just imagine effectively a Pokemon card equivalent, but basically on your smartphone. You play little battles with each other. You can swap cards. And, you can trade them. You buy the digital packs. It's a very digital world we're going into.
A family member has bought some of these NBC clips. You can buy some of the NBC video clips online as NFTs. Mm-hmm. And I think he purchased one for $5. And, he's put it out on OpenSea. And, maybe someone will come along and say, oh, yeah, I was at that game. Oh, that's me sitting over there. Yeah, I'm going to buy that. So, of course, then what sort of value do you put on it? Arguably, it's almost bigger than the cryptocurrency market, isn't it? In many ways.
For sure.
Because it's literally nebulous. There are so many potential applications and ideas for it. And of course, you can see, you can see manufacturers like Lego getting involved. Where Lego is so creative, they've changed the way they do now. They're selling their products now. I'm on Instagram. I see adverts for Lego all the time. You can buy Lego flowers now, which are constructed and. It's so clever, and the NFT marketplace, I think would absolutely suit Lego down to the ground. Maybe they've already made moves in that direction.
Well, quite possibly. They possibly have. And just on the cryptocurrency theme, of course, Amazon is looking to recruit a cryptocurrency expert, and the rumor from inside was they're looking to accept payments in Bitcoin as well. And of course, Mode, that is what they're doing now. They've partnered with the Hut Group, huge company. You can transact in Bitcoin and get cash back, and it's considerably good cash back as well. Actually, the percentage is pretty high. And you've just got to, I think anyone who's concerned about it or not sure, you've just got to start going down the rabbit hole, just a little bit. And then you realize it's not that scary, and don't put too much risk in, and just start opening an account, maybe buying some Bitcoin, maybe sending some to your friend or what have you, and just looking into it and just going down that rabbit hole, and you realize it's it's not scary. It's not that complicated. And at least you then, you know, you're broadening your mind, ready for it, because it's not going away. It's not going away.
No, it's not. It's here to stay, and it's going to form a huge part of all of our futures.
Indeed. Well, Alan, thank you very much. That's 45 minutes. It's longer than the normal research talks, but I think we've covered a lot there, and I think it's timely to do something like this in the dry summer of the markets. So thank you very much for your time, and we'll catch up again in a week's time, I guess.
Thank you, Mark. It's been good to talk.
Thank you for listening to this Stockbox interview. For more information, interviews, and videos, visit our website at stockboxmedia.com or give us a follow on Twitter by searching @StockboxMedia.